Welcome to the Eurovision Travel Guide. In this monthly series, we explore the story of a particular country in the Eurovision Song Contest, learning about some of their entries, their national selection methods, and some other noteworthy points. This month, we are taking a look at Sweden. This is ESC 101. Good morgon, good eftermiddag, good kväll. Välkommen till ESC 101, ditt hem för Eurovisions historia undan kväll. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to ESC 101, your home of Eurovision history and obscurity. This is the podcast where we take a look at the Eurovision Song Contest throughout the year to uncover the story behind the world's largest international televised music competition. Welcome to episode 33. My name is Alexander. I have a few announcements before we begin today's episode. A reminder that this episode will be the last spoiler-free episode before we switch to discussing the 2024 Eurovision Song Contest. Starting next week, episodes 34, 35, and 36 will consist of my reviews of the studio version for each entry. These episodes will be published on Friday, April 19th, 26th, and May 3rd at the usual time. There will be no episode on May 10th, as that will be during Eurovision week and I'll be busy enjoying the show. Episodes 37 and 38 will be my reviews of the live performances, with episode 37 covering the non-qualified acts and episode 38 covering the grand final acts. Those episodes will be published on Friday, May 17th and 24th. And episode 39 will return to our usual Eurovision history content, and that will be published on Friday, May 31st. If you wish to remain spoiler-free, I encourage you to check out our back catalog of episodes. Secondly, I'd like to thank you for participating in our Spotify polls. I'd like to bring you up to date on what you've been sharing with us through the months of February and March. Starting from episode 24, your votes were split between Luxembourg's two entries as your favorite entries conducted by Jean-Claude Rick, the conductor that we covered for that episode. Episode 25's coverage of Poland at Eurovision was a unanimous vote for loving Poland at Eurovision, which, to quote the Polish entrant from 2023, is kind of crazy. Episode 26 on the 1978 Interval Act left some of you wanting a bit more, with a majority of the votes in favor of choosing something else to entertain you during the voting sequence. Our bonus episode covering San Marino's national final had a poll asking if you'd thought San Marino would qualify with their chosen entry, and the votes were split between absolutely and I'm not so sure. I swear I didn't vote in this poll, and I think my opinion on this year's San Marino's entry is shifting slightly, but you'll have to stay tuned to find out more. Episode 27, covering Baby Doll, had a unanimous vote for her song Brazil being your number one, which I have to agree wholeheartedly. Episode 28 asked whether you had visited the venue of the 1972 contest in Edinburgh, and voters indicated that they had visited both. If you haven't had the chance, I encourage you to visit Edinburgh. It's a gorgeous city. Episode 29 asked if you had the honor of visiting Moldova, with a majority saying no. I've also never been to Moldova, and it would be an interesting place to visit someday. Episode 30 asked if you approved of Erika Vall's hosting of the 1967 Eurovision Song Contest, with votes being split between Pretty Good and I've Seen Worse, which is not a complete flop, so I guess it's a small victory. Finally, we come up to episodes 31 and 32, whose polls are still open until the end of April. So far, the voters are continuing to support the former Yugoslav countries in their lineup of Kvalifikacija za Millstreet, and Greece's debut at Eurovision is not overly impressing some of the voters. If you want your voice heard on our Spotify polls, be sure to cast your vote or leave a comment on our Instagram posts for each episode. You'll have until the end of April to cast your vote for the polls on episodes 31, 32, and 33. This week's episode explores Sweden at the Eurovision Song Contest. They hold the honor of hosting the 2024 edition of the Eurovision Song Contest, and as such, I thought it would be appropriate to cover Sweden this week before I switch to discussing this year's contest. The 2024 contest will take place in the Malmö Arena, the same arena which hosted the contest in 2013. The Turquoise Carpet and the Euro Club will be held at the Malmö Live venue, and the Eurovision Village will be hosted in Folkets Park, which is Sweden's oldest folk park. I don't exactly know what a folk park is, but apparently it's the oldest in Sweden, so I guess it holds some kind of record. There will also be a pedestrian street called Frisgatan, which is going to be converted into the Eurovision Street, which will host a number of restaurants, cafes, and setups. Finally, Euroglam will open during the week of Eurovision, functioning as an open-air restaurant, offering a marvelous view of the Eurovision Village. Of course, there are plenty of details available on the Eurovision website, and I encourage you to check it out, even if you aren't planning on going to Malmö this year. It's always a good idea to understand what venues exist so you can plan for a future contest. As with most Eurovision Travel Guide episodes, when I cover a country that has more than 10 entries, I don't comment on every single entry, otherwise this episode will be several hours long. If you are interested in hearing comments and reactions to every single entry that Sweden has sent, I encourage you to check out the Eurovision Forever project by the Duusbaw podcast. Jack Eaton, the former co-host, and Elizabeth Allen, the current host of the podcast, completed a pandemic lockdown project which reviewed every single Eurovision entry from 1956 to 2022. I'll leave a link to the appropriate episodes on the show notes page of our website for you to check out. With that being said, let's dive into the history of Sweden at Eurovision. The Kingdom of Sweden is a country on the Scandinavian peninsula, bordering Norway to the north and west, Finland to the east, and Denmark to the southwest via a bridge tunnel. Spanning over 450,000 square kilometers, or just under 174,000 square miles, Sweden is the largest Nordic country. It has a population of around 10.5 million people, with the capital being Stockholm. Sweden joined the European Union in 1995, became a UN member in 1946, and is part of the Schengen area. Sweden does not use the euro, instead they use the Swedish krona. One Canadian dollar is around 8 krona, one US dollar is around 10.5, one euro is 11.5, and one British pound is about 13 krona. The history of Sweden is vast and blurry to say the least, especially on the vast part. I'm going to give you an extremely simplified version of Sweden's history, and I'm glossing over a lot of the important parts. Nobody actually knows when Sweden officially became a political entity in Europe. People have been living in the region since 12,000 BC, and I'm not going to bore you with 12,000 years of history, so I'm going to pick a random date to start with. I've decided to start in the 9th century AD with the start of the Viking Age. The region consisted of small Germanic kingdoms and chiefdoms, operating more similarly to tribes rather than established political entities. The people that lived in Scandinavia often traveled across the seas, taking part in raids against their neighbors and expanding their influence in the region. During their travels and expeditions, the local population was introduced to Christianity, with influences beginning in the late 8th century. The conversion of the region into Christianity was completed around the 11th century, bringing an end to the Viking Age. By the 12th century, paganism was fully replaced and clans were consolidated into a stronger and somewhat unified state. One of the tenets of the Christian tradition is to spread the gospel, or the teachings of Jesus Christ, to other people who have not heard it before. In the early years of the establishment of the church, various powers went on crusades, which often involved violent methods of persuasion. Swedish forces began quote-unquote colonizing Finland in an effort to remove additional pagan influences in the region. With the consolidation of these tribes unified under a Christian tradition, the rulers of Sweden began reforming power structures. Specifically, Birger Jarl the Regent, Jarl in this case meaning a powerful nobleman second only to the King of Sweden, played a pivotal role in Sweden's consolidation process. Birger ruled on behalf of King Valdemar, who was 11 years old when he became king, and not wanting to trust an 11-year-old to rule a kingdom, Birger served as regent from 1248 to 1266. Birger is known as the founder of Stockholm and the creator of national legislation, working to abolish serfdom and to bring a feudal system similar to those in continental Europe. Over the next 300 years, Sweden's political boundaries and status would shift as rulers claimed the throne. There was a brief union with Norway in 1319 when Sweden and Norway ended up sharing the same monarch, and another union was formed in 1397 called the Kalmar Union, which was a personal union, meaning it was joined under a single monarch. This union comprised of Denmark, Sweden, and Norway, along with Norway's overseas colonies including Iceland, parts of Greenland, the Faroe Islands, some modern-day Scottish islands, and the parts of Finland which Sweden controlled. Each kingdom had levels of autonomy, but it was essentially ruled by one common monarch. The Kalmar Union lasted until 1523. By the 16th century, Europe was undergoing the Protestant Reformation. I won't go into the long and complicated history of the Christian Church, but essentially for the first 1500 years, there was one unified Western Christian Church called the Roman Catholic Church. The Church's power and doctrine was challenged in the 16th century, which led to various rulers and people groups rejecting the authority of the Pope, who serves as the human head of the Roman Catholic Church. One of those leaders who ended up rejecting the Pope's authority was King Gustav Vasa, who ended up leading Sweden into forming a Protestant church. Skipping over an imprisoned monarch and a rebellion, we come to King Sigismund III. King Sigismund was the grandson of King Gustav, and with his uncle becoming imprisoned and his father dying at the age of 54, he ended up inheriting the Swedish throne and the title of Grand Duke of Finland. Coincidentally, King Sigismund was also the ruler of the Polish-Lithuanian Commonwealth. As a consequence of being the ruler of all three of these regions, Sweden entered into yet another union, creating the Polish-Swedish Union, which lasted between 1592 and 1599. This union obviously didn't last long, mostly due to King Sigismund's insistence of initiating a counter-reformation movement. He was a Catholic, and because of this, he ended up sparking a civil war that plunged Sweden into financial ruin. Great job. The Reichstag, a legislative body established during King Gustav's reign to include representatives from the four social estates, namely the nobility, clergy, property-owning commoners, and freehold farmers, basically deposed King Sigismund. They demanded that he send his son to succeed him under the condition that he be brought up in the Protestant faith. The demand went unanswered, and so King Sigismund's uncle, King Charles IX, was chosen to ascend to the throne. Despite Sigismund being deposed from the Swedish throne, he did attempt to reclaim the throne to no avail. This increased hostilities between Poland and Sweden for the next 100 years. After the death of King Charles IX in 1611, his successor King Gustavus Adolphus brought Sweden into the Thirty Years' War, bringing Sweden into political prominence in order to help determine the balance of political and religious power in Europe. By the end of the war, Sweden emerged as an imperial force within the continent. They controlled a majority of the Baltic region, and through a series of multiple conflicts, Sweden continued to maintain its empire, thanks in part to the support from its closest ally, France. During the 17th, 18th, and early 19th centuries, Sweden also held overseas colonies, including the Swedish Gold Coast in Africa, New Sweden, which comprised of parts of modern-day Delaware, Maryland, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania in the United States of America, Saint Barthélemy and Guadeloupe, now part of France, and Parangitipetai in India. That is probably not how you pronounce it. I do apologize. By the early 18th century, Sweden's territories were diminishing due to losses in the Great Northern War, a conflict from 1700 to 1721 against the Tsardom of Russia, which established their power in Finland and the Baltics. Due to these losses, the people of Sweden began shifting power away from the monarch, focusing instead on parliamentary governance and civil rights. With King Gustav III's self-coup in 1772 and several attempts to create a constitutional monarchy, by 1809 Sweden had developed its parliament into the entity that exists today. This foundation led towards a form of modern democracy by the end of the century. Despite these reforms, Swedish forces were interested in re-establishing its dominance in the Baltic Sea. Sweden decided to align itself against France in the Napoleonic Wars. However, despite this rivalry, a French marshal named Jean-Baptiste Bernadotte was chosen as the heir presumptive to King Charles XIII, who ended up dying childless. Before the king's death, the Battle of Leipzig brought the opportunity for Sweden to regain its relevance within Europe. Sweden ended up participating in the war as part of the coalition force against Napoleon, and ended up winning. Sweden entered into an agreement with the Danish-Norwegian forces, who were allied with France, to cede Norway to the King of Sweden in exchange for northern German provinces. This trade ended up eventually forming a personal union with Norway for the final time, which existed from 1814 to 1905. The United Kingdoms of Sweden and Norway was not a stable entity by any stretch of the imagination. However, by the beginning of the 20th century, the union managed to find a peaceful dissolution. And on October 26, 1905, the Swedish crown accepted the dissolution of the Union and the independent Kingdom of Sweden that we know and love today was re-established. Sweden was officially neutral during both world wars, and Sweden remained neutral during the Cold War era, remaining outside of NATO and the Warsaw Pact. However, this changed just over a month ago, with Sweden officially joining NATO on March 7, 2024. This brings us to modern-day Sweden. Turning us back toward the Eurovision Song Contest, Sweden's radio and television broadcasters, under the direction of Sveriges Rundradiodanst, apologies for my Swedish, were founding members of the European Broadcasting Union. Sveriges Radio held the responsibility of Sweden's participation in the contest from 1958 until 1979, and Sveriges Television took over in 1980. Sweden's first participation occurred in 1958, and they have participated every year since, except for three contests. Sweden withdrew in 1964 due to a musicians' union strike. They withdrew in 1970 due to the contest marginalizing small countries and low ratings, although I suspect there were some that protested the incompetence of the executive supervisor Clifford Brown and his inability to pick a single winner in 1969. And finally, Sweden's last withdrawal occurred in 1976, mostly because the broadcaster felt the contest was becoming too commercial. However, there were also concerns of them winning again and having to host so soon after their success in 1974. It sounds a bit arrogant, but considering they won with ABBA, I'll let them have that one. Over their 62 participations in the Eurovision Song Contest, they appeared in the grand final 61 times, with their only non-qualification occurring in 2010, where they placed 11th in the semifinal. And they were technically not supposed to have qualified in 2008, but we'll get to that later. They are arguably the most successful country in the Eurovision Song Contest with 7 wins, tying with Ireland. They have 43 top 10 placements, 27 top 5 placements, 6 bronze placements, 1 silver finish, and of course, 7 victories, winning the Eurovision Song Contest in 1974, 84, 91, 99, 2012, 2015, and 2023. Sweden also holds the title of having the only double-winning female artist, with Loreen winning both the 2012 and 2023 contests. Ireland also has the only double-winning male artist, Johnny Logan, winning in 1980 and 1987. Sweden placed last twice, in 1963 getting a nul point, their only nul point to date, and in 1977 placing 18th out of 18 countries, gaining only 2 points. Their lowest technical placement was in 1992, placing 22nd out of 23 countries. Sweden placed in the top 4 of every single semi-final since 2004, except 4-3. They placed 7th in their semi-final in 2021, they placed 11th in the 2010 semi-final, failing to qualify, and they placed 12th in the 2008 semi-final, qualifying due to the jury wildcard system, which I wholeheartedly disapprove of. Again, we'll get to 2008 later on. Sweden's entries have been sung in either Swedish or English, with one entry being in English and French. Sweden's first use of English occurred in 1965. There was no formal language rule up to that point, as countries just automatically used their national language. The EBU decided it didn't like that, forcing a language rule change until 1972. They removed the language rule in 1973, with Sweden taking full advantage of the situation. They sent their 1973, 74, and 75 entries in English, and had they decided to participate in 1976, they'd also probably send their entry in English as well. The rule was restored in 1977 for 16 out of the 18 countries, with Belgium and Germany getting special treatment because their songs were submitted before the rule change was enforced. Sweden continued to use Swedish until 1998, when the language rule was permanently removed. Hooray! Sweden has not sent an entry in Swedish since. There have been several returning artists that have either competed for Sweden or other countries, so get ready for a little bit of a long list. Siv Malmqvist, who represented Sweden in 1960, returned in 1969 representing West Germany. Family Four, who represented Sweden in 1971, returned in 1972, with Marie Bergman, who was a member of Family Four, also returning to represent Sweden in 1994 alongside Roger Pontare, and Roger would also end up returning in 2000 to represent Sweden. Bjorn Skifs, who represented Sweden in 1978, returned in 1981. Kiki Danielsson, who represented Sweden in 1982 as part of CHIPS, returned in 1985. Elisabeth Andreasson, who also represented Sweden in 1982 as part of CHIPS, returned in 1985, joining with Han Krogh to form Bobby Sox, as well as returning in 1994 to represent Norway with Jan Werner Danielsson, and in 1996 to also represent Norway on her own. Tommy Kohlberg, who represented Sweden in 1969, returned in 1988. Carola, who represented Sweden in 1983, returned in 1991 and 2006. Gabriel Force, who represented Sweden in 1997, returned in 1999 as a backing vocalist for Charlotte Nielsen. Charlotte Nielsen, renamed to Charlotte Pirelli, represented Sweden in 1999 and 2008. Sahlin, who provided backing vocals for Charlotte Nielsen in 1999, also provided backing vocals for Malta in 2000, Australia in 2016, the United Kingdom in 2019, and ended up representing Estonia in 2002 as a solo artist. Finally, Loreen, who represented Sweden in 2012, returned in 2023. Sweden has used the national final Melodifestivalen to select every single one of their entries except for their debut entry in 1958. Well, I say they use Melodifestivalen every year, that's technically a lie. Emphasis on the technically. When you look at the Wikipedia page for Melodifestivalen, you'll notice that it started in 1959, but this is technically not true. The name Melodifestivalen doesn't appear until 2002, so what's the deal with Sweden's national final? Buckle up as I summarize arguably one of Eurovision's most famous national finals, visiting some of my favorite Swedish entries along the way. As mentioned earlier, Sweden's debut at the Eurovision Song Contest was an internal selection for both the artist and the song. In 1958, they sent Alice Babs with the song Lille Stjärna, which was Song of the Week for episode 28. Check out that episode to hear my thoughts on that entry. Alice Babs was chosen by an internal committee composed of representatives from the broadcaster Sveriges Radio and SKAP, the Swedish Society of Popular Music Composers. In 1959, the broadcaster decided to become more transparent with the selection process. I'll make a note here saying that the names of all the national final systems that Sweden used since 1959 have been retroactively renamed to Melodifestivalen, which I personally don't agree with. I will be referring to the original names, which, given my skills in the Swedish language, I'll probably regret doing, but for general purposes, it's all Melodifestivalen, even though it's technically not. 1959's entry had an internal selection for the artist, but a national final for the song selection, which was sung by different artists. Why they chose to waste people's time by using other artists rather than the one they wanted, I will never understand. Around 200 songs were submitted to the broadcaster, with a selection of these songs being placed into one of 8 semifinals, narrowing them down to 8 songs. The program was called, and again, my apologies for my terrible Swedish, Såg det med musik, stora schlagertävlingen, translated as Say It With Music, the Great Schlager Competition. See, that's how you name a national final. Everybody, take notes, Sweden knows how to name things, albeit in a complicated language that I know nothing about. They sent the song Augustine, sung by Sig Malmqvist in the national final, and sung by Brita Borg at Eurovision. The song was determined by an expert jury. From 1960 to 1963, they changed the name to Eurovision Schlagern, Svensk Final, translated as Eurovision's Hit, Swedish Final. I preferred the old title. The same system of internally selecting the artist and televising the selection of the song was used once again. However, after the successful hit of Augustine, the broadcaster received approximately 1,100 songs in 1960. The broadcaster ended up holding 8 radio pre-selection rounds, with 2 songs from each program advancing to a semi-final. This semi-final then narrowed down the 8 songs to 4 using various jury groups to ensure it wasn't the same people making all the decisions. Sviv Malmqvist was internally chosen to represent Sweden at Eurovision in 1960, probably as an apology for not letting her go the year before, and she sang the song Alla andra får varan, translated as All the Others Get Each Other.
Alla andra får varann. Varför ska det vara så? Varför drabbas just vi två när alla andra får varann? Om jag blott vågade fria skulle du nog ge ditt ja.
This song is a fun tune to listen to. It swings and it's a nice bop to hum along to. It's the 1960s, so I'm not expecting euphoria, but for the time, it's pleasant to listen to. Her dress is a bit plain and could use a redesign, and compared to the fashion trends just a few years later, it's definitely more than acceptable. However, despite Sviv Malmqvist's performance at Eurovision, she wasn't satisfied, and she ended up trying again in 1961. This proved to be a bit of a mistake, as Sviv Malmqvist ended up winning the national final in 1961, but she was replaced by runner-up Lil Babs. What was so controversial that ended up forcing the broadcaster to replace the artist? Well, it was this.
April infekterar mig med kärleken fastid. April dumma spillar kan du lura vart du vill. Alla vill la 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 la. April när du nu till sist slår ut ditt blonda hår.
That's right, she couldn't stop laughing. However, the controversy enters into a new level when we learn that the recording you just heard wasn't the performance the juries voted on, it was the reprise. That's right, she was declared the winner, and this was the reprise performance that followed the end credits. Assuming that she performed her song professionally, her more laid-back performance during the reprise, which is quite standard by the way, ended up getting her replaced by Lil Babs. Talk about a backstabbing move. Imagine if Lena in 2010 had her trophy taken away because she didn't perform her winning song flawlessly as the credits rolled. Sviv was robbed of another chance at Eurovision. 1962's national selection managed to select both the artist and the song. It's a miracle, with the winner being determined by postcard voting. I'm not sure how that exactly works, but Sweden finally managed to iron out all the controversy and found a system that ended up working. Something weird about the national final in the 1960s is that each song would have two artists, one who would sing with a large orchestra and another with a small orchestra. I don't know how or why this system was used and developed, but it apparently worked for Sweden. Or so they thought, for 1963 rolls around and Sweden encounters their first humiliation at the Eurovision Song Contest, coming in last, earning a null point. They sent Monica Zetterlund with the song En gång I Stockholm, translated as Once Upon a Time in Stockholm.
Kom med mig, sa min vän. Nu faller vinterns första tysta snö. Och sommaren är slut. Jag har en segelbåt i klara sjö. Kom min vän.
I usually have some leeway for the 1960s, but my goodness, this song is a snooze fest. It's slower than a 100-year-old tortoise, and Monica doesn't even look into the camera. The camera just shows her face for 3 minutes, which, given some of the other entries that year, particularly France and Denmark, Sweden deserves that null point for wasting all of that potential. This song needs a faster tempo, some eye contact, and some better camera angles, and let's not even mention the dress. Ugh. Oh. The Swedish public agreed with me, probably, and they forced Sweden to withdraw in 1964 as a form of punishment for this insulting entry. I'm just kidding. What actually happened was a musician's strike. Whatever the reason, Sweden went away for a year and thought about what they did. Apparently, they didn't think hard enough because they ended up causing even more controversy. Their entry in 1965 shook executives at the EBU so much that they ended up changing the rules as a result. Want to guess what Sweden did? They sung in a language that wasn't Swedish. The nerve! In 1965, they renamed the national final to Svensk Song Final, translated as Swedish Song Final. Terrible name. The broadcaster internally selected Ingvar Wicksell to sing their entry. 8 songs were submitted, with only 6 going into the final, as 2 of the songs were rejected by the artist himself. He sung all 6 songs, hooray, as the selected artist should have been doing from the beginning. But what's weird about 1965 is that the national final he sung in Swedish. But in Eurovision, he sung in English. Why he did this, I have no idea. The national final version was entitled Enorstadis Valg, and in Eurovision, the song was called Absent Friend. I'm not going to bore you with a sample of this song, it was terrible, and I'm moving on to the delight that is 1966. Now, I've already covered the Swedish entry for the 1966 Eurovision Song Contest in episode 11, where we explored the life of Lill Lindfors. Sweden's entry was a duet between Lill Lindfors and Svante Thuresson, and if you'd like to hear my breakdown of that entry, I encourage you to check out that episode. It's absolute perfection, and it's Sweden's only silver podium finish to date. We move forward to 1967, where Sweden once again changes the name of the national final. This time, it's called Melody Festival, translated as Melody Festival. This name was used from 1967 until 1993. Now, I'm not going to go through every single minute change of the national final. Honestly, you could just make a completely separate podcast talking about just Melody Festivalen, and I'll let my friend Jack Eaton do that. Shout out to Jack, who is a super fan of Sweden at Eurovision. He'll let me know if any of my opinions about Sweden are incorrect. So instead of going through 26 years of Melody Festival, let's highlight a few notable Swedish entries. I'll also make a note that we've already covered the Swedish entry from 1979 in episode 21, where we discussed Eurovision entries with an outer space theme. Check out that episode to hear about that entry. Instead, we turn ourselves 50 years and 6 days ago, if you're listening to this on release date, or if you're listening in the future, 50-ish years. The year is 1974, and of course, you and I both know that I couldn't ignore this entry. It's Eurovision's most iconic entry, Eurovision's most successful band, and Eurovision's most popular entry as determined by the 2005 program entitled Congratulations, 50 Years of the Eurovision Song Contest. It's the one you're all thinking of. It's... It's ABBA with the song Waterloo. Yes, absolute perfection. Now, if you happen to not overly be familiar with the Eurovision Song Contest, this song is probably the one song that you are guaranteed to recognize. That's right, ABBA's career actually launched internationally by their win of the Eurovision Song Contest in 1974. While I'll be saving ABBA's story for their own episode, they did attempt to represent Sweden a year earlier. It was not meant to be, and their success launched in 1974. This is the crown jewel in Eurovision's tiara. What can I say that hasn't already been said about this entry? It is sheer perfection. It is the most popular Eurovision entry of all time. It is the song with the highest score in the Eurovision Forever project, tied with Ukraine's 2007 entry. I could go on and on and on about this entry, but alas, there are other lesser-known entries that require more in-depth attention. Sweden's first victory in the Eurovision Song Contest had them hosting the following year in Stockholm. Apparently, the broadcaster was overwhelmed with the responsibility, and they withdrew for the third and to date final time the year after. Despite their withdrawal, Sweden returned to the contest in 1977, where they were forced to return to using the Swedish language. As I mentioned earlier, the EBU removed the language rule in 1973, and with the winning songs of 1974, 75, and 76 being English language songs, despite 1976 being won by the United Kingdom, the EBU went back to language rule in 1977. This didn't deter the Swedes, as they continued to send entries that captivated audiences across Europe. They won a second time in 1984 with the song Digilu Digile, sung by the Herreys, a group of three brothers wearing golden shoes. However, I don't want to focus solely on Sweden's winning entries, so instead, I'm bringing us to the following year, 1985. Sweden hosts the contest, this time in Gothenburg. Lill Lindfors, who represented Sweden in 1966, is the host, and I covered her hosting of the 1985 contest in episode 11. Sweden's home entry was sung by Kiki Danielsson, and the song is called Bra Vibrabrunner, translated as Good Vibrations. This song is fun, peppy, and full of energy. Much like the song title, this sends good vibrations, or as the kids call it, good vibes. This is what 1963's entry needed. It's a fantastic song to bop along with, and the two dancers bring an element of the performance to life, dancing to positivity. The backing singers are statues, but considering it's 1985, I'll give them a pass. I love this entry. Not as good as Norway, but it's still a solid entry, and it came third, so Sweden can't really complain. Now, I know I said I didn't want to focus on winning entries, but this one I feel I can't completely bypass. The year is 1991, and the entry is sung by Carola. This is her second time representing Sweden at the contest. And this entry is not only iconic, it's one of my favorites from 1991, and it's also a favorite of Jack Eaton. Here is Fångad av en stormvind, translated as Captured by a Stormwind. I will say, the song itself is fantastic. It's still beloved by fans to this day, including Jack Eaton. The dancing is wonderfully choreographed, but I'm taking points away for the outfits. Sorry, Jack, but Carola's outfit is alright. I was expecting something more. Something that's reflective of the storm she is captured by, or at least something that feels more akin to romance rather than the plain outfit she's wearing. What's inexcusable is the backing dancers. They are wearing office wear, and it looks super awkward when you watch the performance back. The suit jackets bend in weird ways, and they should have just worn something better fitting and better styled. It's still an iconic song, and I love it regardless. We bring ourselves to the year 1994, and for some inexplicable reason, the name of Sweden's national final is changed from Melody Festival to Melody Festivalen. That's right, they just added the EN at the end, which in the English equivalent means the, making it the Melody Festival rather than just Melody Festival. This only occurred in 1994, and it's completely bewildering to me. From 1995 to 2001, they rename it back to Melody Festival. Before moving on to the 21st century, there is one entry that I want to briefly touch upon, Sweden's 1996 entry Den Vilda, translated as The Wild One, sung by the group One More Time. Mm-hmm. I will say this. Great song, terrible band name. There were some people who called this group the new ABBA. I have no idea who was saying it, but whoever was saying it was at least somewhat right. One of the members of the band, Peter Grönvall, is the son of Benny Andersson, one of the members of ABBA. In fact, you can see Peter playing the piano, literally following in his father's footsteps just 22 years earlier. The song itself is soothing, something that I could see ABBA recording. It's akin to 1996, with songs having an Enya vibe, sounds of new age bursting forth onto the music scene, which, depending on your music taste, is either perfection or plain nonsense. I liked this entry, and the group ended up winning the pre-qualification nonsense that they used in 1996, and in the grand final, they ended up placing third. Sadly, the band broke up a year later, but they did reform in 2021, much like ABBA ended up reforming in the 2020s. Sweden ended up winning Eurovision a fourth time in 1999 with Take Me to Your Heaven by Charlotte Nielsen, now known as Charlotte Perrelli. That entry is your typical Swedish pop that I could see ABBA recording for fun, and 1999 is also the year that the language rule was permanently removed and Sweden divorced its national language in Eurovision, choosing to use English up to the present day. In 2002, the broadcaster changed the name of the national final for the final time, restoring the EN in Melodifestivalen, and retroactively renaming all the previous national finals to that name. Again, in my opinion, this is historically incorrect, and I personally don't acknowledge that change, but we move on to the perfection that is Sweden from 2000 to 2006. Every single entry between those years I absolutely love, and I can't spend time breaking down every single entry. All I'll say is that I encourage you to watch the compilation and see if you enjoy the entries yourself. Carola returned in 2006 for the third time, Charlotte Perrelli returned for the second time in 2008, and Greta Thunberg's mother enters the Eurovision stage for the first time. That's right, the Swedish environmental activist's mother was a Eurovision star. We'll get to that in a moment. Instead, I want to take you to the controversy that is 2008. The EBU, in their infinite wisdom, decided to meddle with the voting system because, of course, they did. 2008 is the year they introduced the downright senseless and foolish system that is the jury wildcard. Rather than letting the public decide which 10 entries advanced from the semifinals, the EBU decided to let the public choose 9 entries, and the 10th entry from the semifinal would be determined by the votes of the backup jury system. Of course, televote systems don't always work, and countries need a backup system to give their votes. It makes sense to use a jury. But then that jury takes away the power from the public. We now have a problem. Now, I'll admit, I actually don't know where I sit with the juries in the semifinals. I used to prefer keeping the 50-50 split in the semifinals, but since reintroducing the 100% televote system in the semifinals, I don't necessarily miss the juries. I still think there needs to be juries in the grand final, as having industry professionals to vote alongside the public, which, let's face it, is largely based on emotional responses and regional recognition, it's important to keep the balance of musicality and fan favorites. You can, of course, disagree with me on the role of juries, but I think we can all agree that using jury wildcards is undemocratic and completely irrational. Sweden's 2008 entry was the song Hero by Charlotte Perrelli, the same Charlotte that won in 1999. Sweden placed 12th in that semifinal, and in a normal semifinal system, it would have been Sweden's first non-qualification. North Macedonia, then known as the former Yugoslav Republic of Macedonia, came 10th in that semifinal, and should have, in my opinion, advanced to the grand final. Don't get me wrong, I love the studio version of Sweden's entry that year, but the live performance was weak. The monochrome at the beginning made no sense, and vocally, this is just not as strong as North Macedonia's entry, which sounded like this. Just to be right by your side. Oh, let me love you. Just let me love you. For your Bulgaria ended up placing 11th, and I don't know how that happened because that entry was just nonsensical noise. Regardless, Sweden avoided non-qualification that year, and Charlotte Pirelli ended up placing 18th. We move past the controversy of 2008 into 2009. This is the year that Greta Thunberg's mother, Malena Ernman, represented Sweden with their only entry to feature a language other than Swedish or English. Here is La Voix.
Can you make a promise? Can you make a promise? Stay forever true. Whoa, whoa, whoa. That I'm forever yours.
Operatic perfection. This ended up placing 21st, which is criminal. The vocal capabilities of this woman astound me. It is beautiful. She is gorgeous in that bright dress, and that sound is seldom heard in the Eurovision Song Contest, especially in the 21st century. I absolutely love this entry, and Sweden has re-entered their perfection zone. Alas, that didn't last long, as Sweden would face their biggest humiliation since their null point in 1963. Non-qualification. Dun, dun, dun. That's right, the EBU got rid of that awful wildcard nonsense and the top 10 of the semifinal returned. But with it, Sweden was punished for escaping their non-qualification in 2008. The year is 2010, and the artist who must carry the dishonor of being Sweden's only artist to not qualify to the grand final of the Eurovision Song Contest is Anna Bergendahl with the song This Is My Life.
This is my life, my friend, and this is my time to start. Now this is my life, my friend, and I can't be no one else. I'm done tipping on my toes.
There are parts of this song that I enjoy, and there are parts which bore me to tears. The instrumentation, love it. It's nice, sounds smooth and light. The lyrics and the vocals are just eh. And this non-qualification is what it is. Would I have wanted to see this in the grand final? I'm not sure. I'm not a huge fan of Cyprus or Georgia that year, and they ended up qualifying, but would I replace one of them with Sweden? I have no idea. Sweden's broadcaster had a mini heart attack and decided to ramp up the quality of their entries. From 2011 to 2019, every single Swedish entry in the semifinals placed in the top three, and with the exception of 2013 and 2017, every entry placed in the top five in the grand final. Sweden won the contest two more times, in 2012 with Loreen and the song Euphoria, and in 2015 with Måns Zelmerlöw with the song Heroes. Sweden's appeal to Eurovision fans continued throughout the 2010s, with many of their entries appealing to my personal tastes, including Sweden's 26th entrant Franz with the song If I Were Sorry.
But I know deep inside, for you it's just another dance. If I were sorry, I'd give you all the glory. If I were sorry, if I were sorry, different story. If I was sorry, if I was sorry, oh. I hold my breath till my face turned blue. I rob a bank in a post office to swim across the ocean. If I was sorry.
Host nations often have trouble scoring well in the grand final. In 2016, Sweden placed 5th, which is a fantastic result. This song is easy to listen to. It's not fireworks and explosions, but rather I feel the emotion that France puts into the song. Normally, I don't go for these kinds of songs, but something about it speaks to me. I don't know if it's the lyrics or the instrumentation. I'd normally complain about the lack of dynamics or direction, but I just like this. I don't know why, I simply do. Of course, the 2020s roll around and the pandemic cancels Eurovision for the first and to date only time. Sweden makes the incorrect decision and refuses to send the winner of the 2020 edition of Melodifestivalen to represent them in 2021. The Mamas, who were the backing singers for their 2019 entry, won the 2020 edition of Melodifestivalen and should have, in my opinion, gone in 2021. Instead, the Mamas entered into the 2021 edition of Melodifestivalen and placed third, getting fourth in the juries and second in the televote. Sweden, for some reason, ended up sending Tusse with the song Voices. While I respect Tusse as an artist, this song was terrible. The costume is atrocious, and the Mamas should have gone instead. Sweden's entry in 2021 placed 14th, which was their lowest placement since 2013. Also, 14th? That was way too high. The song is repetitive. It sounds like generic Swedish pop with no real heart and soul in it. Did it deserve to qualify? Absolutely. In that field of songs, Sweden's quality was easily top 10 in the semifinal, but 14th in the grand final? I can name 6 countries that I thought did better than Sweden. Tusse has a great singing voice, don't get me wrong. He deserved to be in the grand final, but he also deserves a better song and a better outfit. Skipping over Sweden's 2022 entry, which is just their 2014 entry with an upgrade. Sorry, Jack, but I've been going on and on about Sweden for so long, and we still have one more winner and their voting stats to go, so I have to keep moving forward. We bring ourselves to Sweden's latest participation in 2023. Loreen returns for the second time with the song Tattoo, and she wins for the second time, securing her place in the Eurovision history books. Here is Sweden's 7th winning entry, Tattoo.
Violins playing and the angels crying when the stars are aligned, I'll be there. No, I don't care about the bell. So long as you can laugh, and all I care about is you. You're stuck on me like a tattoo. No, I don't care about the pain. I like the fire and the rain. You still get closer to you. You're stuck on me like a tattoo.
As soon as I heard this song in the lineup, I knew this would be a winner. This song screams winner to me. And given Loreen's history with her 2012 entry, this would be an artistic masterpiece which cannot be ignored. This song is stuck on me like a tattoo. It is majestic, it is vocally powerful, masterful in its creative expressions. Yes, Finland sent a fantastic song. No, Finland was not robbed. Sweden's entry in 2023 was a deserved winner. This had a better overall package compared to Finland. Vocally stronger, visual elements more closely tied together, and the composition of the song holds a dynamic structure which breathes life into its message. The strings, the ambience of the sound, it all came together into a beautiful package. This is visual perfection, and I love this entry. This was my winner of 2023, hands down. This brings us to 2024, where Sweden will be hosting the contest once again. I'm reserving my thoughts on their 2024 entry for episode 36, so stay tuned to hear what I think of Sweden's upcoming entry. Before we conclude our overview of Sweden at the Eurovision Song Contest, let's examine their voting patterns. Looking at the voting system used between 1975 and 2015, when Sweden was in the grand final, they received the most points from Norway, with 275 points given, Denmark with 264 points given, and Finland with 181 points given. This shouldn't surprise you, considering these three countries are all Sweden's neighbors, and given the regional closeness of these countries, there tends to be interest in each other's music. What is surprising about this is that the country who gave the fourth most points to Sweden is not Iceland. In fact, Iceland is the country that gave the fifth most points to Sweden with 159 points. The country that ended up giving Sweden the fourth most points is the United Kingdom with 177 points. Sweden also holds the rare honor of receiving points from all 51 other participating countries, including Serbia and Montenegro and Morocco. Now, if you thought that Iceland not being in Sweden's top four points givers is shocking, wait until you find out who Sweden ended up voting for between 1975 and 2015. If you guessed Norway, Denmark, Iceland, or Finland, you would be wrong. Gasps abound, as Sweden's favorite country between 1975 and 2015 is none of their Nordic neighbors. Sweden ended up giving the most points to Ireland, giving them 202 points over the years. This shocked me to my very core, and this is a moment of celebration for Ireland. They share the same number of victories, and apparently Sweden shares love with Ireland. Sweden's second and third favorite countries will not surprise you. It's Norway, with Sweden giving them 179 points over the years, followed by Denmark with 172 points given. The United Kingdom and Germany take fourth and fifth place, with Iceland and Finland rounding the Nordic countries, placing in Sweden's sixth and seventh most voted for country, which is lower than I expected. Clearly the love for Sweden isn't so bidirectional. And that is the story of Sweden at the Eurovision Song Contest. I know that I skipped over some pretty important entries, and Jack is probably writing a furiously toned letter demanding justice. However, for countries like Sweden, their story is vast and complicated, mostly vast in this case. Despite skipping over several iconic entries, I hope you enjoyed learning about Sweden at the Eurovision Song Contest, and let me know if you're planning on going to Malmö for Eurovision in 2024. The question will be posted in our Spotify poll for this week, and you'll have until the end of April to vote. Before we close today's episode, it's time for Song of the Week. This is the part of the show where I share a Eurovision entry that I absolutely love, or perhaps I hate it. Maybe it's totally forgettable, or I ended up obsessing over it. Because it's a Eurovision Travel Guide episode, I've gone ahead and picked an entry from Sweden. And of course, there is only one Swedish entry that I could have chosen for Song of the Week, so let's dive right into it. This week's Song of the Week is the 1974 Swedish entry Waterloo, sung by ABBA. Composer Benny Andersson and Björn Ulvaeus, lyricist Stikkan Andersson, conducted by Sven-Olof Waldoff, this entry won the contest in 1974, getting 24 points. It got 5 points from Finland and Switzerland, 3 points from the Netherlands, 2 points from Germany, Israel, and Norway, and 1 point from Ireland, Luxembourg, Portugal, Spain, and Yugoslavia. This is the first Song of the Week which features a winning entry. I tend to avoid winning entries as I prefer showcasing other entries which are sometimes forgotten. However, this week I could not resist the temptation to celebrate ABBA's performance on the Eurovision stage. This performance is absolute perfection. The conductor literally wore a Napoleon costume and personified the Battle of Waterloo perfectly. The song is a war on love, and how often we succumb to defeat on the battlefield of love. Failing to resist the charms of our love interest, and surrendering to the tender embrace of romance and love. How could I ever refuse? Except 5 countries refused to give this song any points, which bothers me. The United Kingdom, Greece, Monaco, Belgium, and Italy completely blanked Sweden. Greece I'll forgive because it's their debut year and their juries don't have any idea what they're doing. Monaco I'm extremely disappointed in because I love Monaco. The United Kingdom, maybe it's the stress of hosting, but seriously, no points to Sweden, you've gone mad. As for Belgium and Italy, well, Italy had their own controversy to deal with, so they're probably distracted, and Belgium was just being Belgium, I guess, so at any rate, this entry is perfection. Their costumes are the personification of the 1970s, and this song is just one of an endless list of ABBA hits. This week's Song of the Week celebrates the 50th anniversary of ABBA's victory at the Eurovision Song Contest 1974 and the launch of their international careers. Sweden is a powerhouse in the Eurovision Song Contest, and their 7th victory in 2023 cements that fact. Ireland now shares the crown with Sweden, and while I hope Ireland regain their footing with their 2024 entry, Sweden continues to bring the quality that Eurovision fans need in the lineup of songs. While some entries are generic pop, which leaves something to be desired, Sweden knows how to produce a good show, and brings a standard of quality in their entries which other countries hope to emulate, or at least compete against in a meaningful way. Thank you for listening to this week's episode. If you'd like to get in touch with your thoughts or comments, you can reach out to our Instagram page at ESC101podcast. You can also send us an email, ESC101podcast@gmail.com. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss out on future episodes. And if you haven't already done so, please consider leaving us a review and sharing the podcast with your friends. Remember that we are taking a vacation from the historical topics and moving right into the 2024 contest. For those of you who wish to remain spoiler-free, I will see you on May 17th with episode 37. Otherwise, I will see you next week as I review the entries competing in semifinal 1. You have been listening to ESC 101. See you next time.